I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. My name is Jim Spillman. I am the proud principal of the school community here at St. Joseph's Collegiate Institute. And on behalf of our leadership team and the St. Joe's faculty and staff, we welcome all of you, our students, our distinguished guests, our media partners, members of the larger Western New York community, and of course, our two candidates. Welcome to St. Joe's for the 40th annual political debate. We invite you all to stand at this time as we will begin our morning together in prayer. Let us remember that we are in the holy presence of God. Loving Father, we thank you for bringing all of us together this morning for this special opportunity to listen to the two candidates for the district attorney's position in Erie County and to learn more about some of the many issues impacting our community. We pray for these two leaders and for all who serve in our government. May they always lead with compassion, a commitment to social justice, and a concern for the dignity of all people. Finally, we pray that, no matter what the results of our upcoming election are, our county, our community, and our country will come together in unity, strengthened by our shared values and aspirations. St. John Baptist de La Salle, and live Jesus in our hearts. We invite you to please remain standing for the singing of our national anthem. The anthem will be sung by the St. Joe's Varsity Singers under the direction of Mr. Michael Hooker.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rockets' red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave.
Before our debate officially begins, we'd like to introduce our two candidates to the audience that's gathered here today and to those who are listening or watching from afar. We start by welcoming Mr. James Gardner, the Republican and Conservative Party nominee for Erie County District Attorney. Mr. Gardner has spent over 14 years working in the Erie County justice system, both as a prosecutor and now as a law clerk. He was originally hired as an assistant Erie County District Attorney and worked his way up through the local courts trying misdemeanors and DWIs throughout Erie County. He now serves as the principal law clerk to Erie County Court Judge Kenneth Case. Outside of the courthouse, Mr. Gardner is an active community volunteer here in Buffalo, where he lives with his wife and three children. This is Mr. Gardner's first debate here at St. Joe's. Welcome to St. Joe's, Mr. Gardner. We also welcome Mr. Mike Kane, the Democratic and Working Families Party nominee for Erie County District Attorney. Mr. Kane is a lifelong resident of Erie County. He received his bachelor's degree from Siena College, his master's in business administration from Clarkson University, and his Juris Doctor from the University at Buffalo School of Law. Mr. Kane has been practicing law for more than 31 years. He first served as a prosecutor in the Erie County District Attorney's Office, and has also spent time as a trial attorney in the private sector and helped to manage two different law firms. Since 2017, he has served as District Attorney John Flynn's first Deputy District Attorney, a role responsible for the day-to-day operations of the District Attorney's Office. Mr. Kane currently lives in Orchard Park with his wife and four children, and this is also the first time that he's debated at St. Joe's. Welcome to St. Joe's, Mr. Kane. Beyond our two candidates, we also welcome several local government and civic leaders who have joined us this morning. And as I read your name, I just invite you to stand and be recognized. First, former Erie County District Attorney John Flynn is here. New York State Assemblyman Bill Conrad. And then three of our alums who are serving in public office. First, we welcome back a New York State Senate Minority Leader Rob Ort, class of 1997. Member of the Buffalo City Council, Joe Ferletto, class of 2000. And then our state Supreme Court Judge, Honorable Emilio Colaiacovo, class of 1994. This morning, all of the debate questions have been developed and will be asked by our student panel, a group of four students from our Advanced Placement Government class. The young men on this year's panel are Ryan Grimm, Jacob Fielding, Giovanni Giancarlo, and Nicholas Wesley. Our timekeepers this morning are John Phillips and Beckett Krauntz, and our fact checkers are Luke Jarka and Peter Marinaro. The question and panel moderator is Mr. Pat McHale from the St. Joe's History Department. And now I turn things over to our debate moderator, a longtime social studies teacher at St. Joe's, and the moderator of the St. Joe's debate for the past 40 years, Mr. Ted Lina.
Wow, 40 years, and I'm only 49 years old. I can't believe it. I am so proud of this school. When I started this in 1984, I never thought it would become what it is today. I also, as I'm looking at my former students, I didn't know that they would be politically elected to very high public office. I am so proud of all of you and to this community here at St. Joe's. To my knowledge, we are the only high school in Western New York and possibly the state that does an annual political debate. I hope you enjoy the debate, and I've told each candidate to speak to this group assembled this morning as if we're all adults, because the guys here are well-informed and will be very attentive. Also, we never ask gotcha questions. We're not here to be biased, and I'm not debating them. I will never interject myself in the debate. If I feel a question was not answered, I might say, Mr. So-and-so, with all due respect, you did not answer the question. So let me briefly inform everybody about the role of the Erie County District Attorney. In our community, the district attorney is the most powerful person in administering justice. Since most crimes violate state laws, the DA is responsible for protecting our society from those who choose to break the law. In 1940, Robert Jackson, former U.S. attorney and U.S. Supreme Court justice, stated that the prosecutor has more control over life, liberty, and reputation than any other person in America. Although the police make an arrest, it's the DA that decides whether to charge a person with a crime, whether to prosecute a person, and if a person has been charged, prosecuted, and convicted by a jury, they will make a recommendation to the trial judge regarding sentencing. Quite frankly, the DA administers justice within this community, and this can include attempting to help people who, when appropriate, all right, and not just punishment. You may be interested to know that the DA's office is a very large law firm. There are 110 ADAs, or assistant district attorneys, and approximately 130 support staff. So it is a very large office that's employed in keeping our community safe and rendering justice. I want to thank each of these two men. Without the candidates willingly being come to debate here at St. Joe's Collegiate, there is no debate. When you're running a campaign, it's not a 40-hour week. It's nonstop. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate both of you coming. And Mr. Flynn, thank you for coming. We've only done two DA's races, the 2016 race and this race. Thank you very much. Very briefly, I'm going to go over the rules of the debate, and then we will begin with an opening statement from Mr. Gardner, and we had a coin toss earlier. So first of all, each candidate will be given 2 minutes for an opening and a closing statement. The opening will follow with a moderator question, me. And any time I ask a question, they will have 1.5 minutes to respond with no rebuttal. There will also be several questions from our student panel, and each direct question to the candidate, they will be given 1.5 minutes, and their opponent will be given 45 seconds for a rebuttal. A bell will ring when their time is up, and I told each candidate I allow them to finish their statement, but not to begin a new statement. We do mute the mics. That was a big question regarding presidential debates. You gotta mute the mic. We mute the mic here at St. Joe's. All right. Are there any questions from our candidates?
Nothing for me.
Okay. So enjoy yourself, gentlemen, and let's begin this debate, Mr. Gardner, with our opening statement.
Thank you. And. Thank you to the St. Joe's community for inviting me here. Thank you to Mr. Kane for agreeing to this debate. And congratulations on this, the 40th anniversary, 40th iteration of this important civic event. It is an honor to be here. It is an honor to be here as the endorsed Republican and conservative candidate for Erie County District Attorney. The District Attorney, in my mind, is the most important governmental office in Erie County. And for the past 14 years, as Mr. Lena said, I have that my entire practice area has been in criminal law. I spent 7 years as an assistant district attorney, and I've spent the last 7 years as a confidential law clerk to an Erie County court judge. And it's in that capacity that I've had a front row seat to my opponent being on the wrong side of every major criminal justice issue that has come before Erie County. He instituted cashless bail 2 years before it was passed in Albany. He instituted open book discovery 4 years before it was instituted and mandated by Albany. He's prosecuted police officers for political reasons when they were simply doing their jobs, and he sought and accepted the support of a radical political organization dedicated to the principle of defunding the police. That is not the record of somebody who deserves 4 years as your chief law enforcement officer. It is one of the reasons why you cannot park your car in your driveway. You cannot park your car in a garage without it being stolen. It's one of the reasons why you can't go to any part, any town of Erie County without your car, without knowing somebody who's been touched by crime, whether it's car theft or any other.
Thank you, Mr. Gardner. Mr. Kane, your opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Lina. And thank you all for inviting me. It's my privilege to be here. This is an incredible event, the 40th anniversary, and I'm honored to be here. I am Mike Kane. I'm the current Erie County District Attorney, and I am the most qualified candidate for this office. based upon my experience. I've been an attorney for over 31 years, and for the last 8 years, it's been my privilege to run the district attorney's office. I've been acting Erie County District Attorney now for 8 months. For the previous 7+ years before that, I was John Flynn's first deputy district attorney. And we handled over 21,000 cases every year in our office. We have 200 people that work for us, including 110 lawyers, and every day we do justice on behalf of the victims in this county. One of the things that I was most responsible for was the supervision of all the homicide cases. Every homicide case that was investigated and prosecuted in Erie County went across my desk. I was involved in those investigations from the very beginning. We would often get phone calls in the middle of the night, and I would work with detectives and police officers and lawyers in my office to make critical decisions in the middle of the night about the most important cases in our office. In 2022, we had one of the worst crimes in the history of this community, and I was on the ground floor of that case. I supervised the lawyers that prosecuted in the investigation of the racist murderer that killed 10 people on the city of Buffalo's east side. We brought justice to those families within 6 months. That's incredibly fast. We were able to obtain a conviction and put that man in prison for the rest of his life. One of the things that we've done in the district attorney's office is we've connected with victims. We've done it in a way that was never before done in the history of this office, and I hope to continue to be able to do that. I started my career in 1994, and I worked my way up as a young prosecutor for 5 years, trying eventually the most serious cases. I tried murders and rapists. And I left the DA's office in 1999 when my wife and I started a family. I'm proud of the support of a number of police organizations, and I look forward to answering all your questions.
Thank you. We'll now begin with a moderator question, and each side will be given a minute and a half to respond, and there will be no rebuttal. Each of you are running for an office as an endorsed candidate of a political party that carries a 4-year term, and this is decided by a popular vote. Would you briefly explain what is the difference between the administration of justice from a Democratic or a Republican district attorney? Mr. Gardner, would you begin with that question, excuse me.
Sure. I'll begin by saying that there didn't used to be a difference. In my lifetime, it seemed as though that Democrats and Republicans largely agreed that criminals belonged in jail, that police officers were to be believed and to be trusted, and that the role of the district attorney was to seek justice on behalf of victims. And I think what we've seen over the past 4 years, and maybe even 8 years, is that the Democratic Party has championed the effort and championed criminals, the wherewithal or the well-being of criminals over the victims of crimes, and they've tried their best to portray police officers as part of the problem instead of part of the solution. And I think that is why there has been a groundswell of support for my candidacy in this race, because the voters of Erie County understand that that is not a sustainable future. That's not how the criminal justice system should work. And I think they expect and demand common sense, which is that when somebody commits a crime, that person should be held accountable. That person should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. There's no room for the criminal justice system to become a laboratory for social justice issues. We're talking about bread and I guess I'll leave it right there.
Thank you. Right. Mr. Kane, your response.
There is no difference between Republicans and Democrats in the administration of justice. It doesn't happen. I work with colleagues across New York State. We have 62 district attorneys in this state. Many of them are Republicans, many of them are Democrats. We all address the issues the same way. We do not do politics in our office. We do not make decisions based upon Republican and Democratic principles. It's as simple as that. And the idea that the police do not get our support is completely false. The police would not be supporting me if they did not have my support. They completely believe in me, they trust in me. I have the endorsement of every police agency in this county that has endorsed any candidate. The Erie County Sheriff's Department, the Buffalo Police Department, the New York State Police, the Amherst Police, Tonawanda Police, even the Western New York Association of Retired Police Officers, because they believe in me, they believe in our mission. It was my privilege to work with John Flynn for the last 8 years, almost 7.5 years. We did justice without looking at someone's registration. We could care less whether someone's a Democrat or a Republican. That's not how we do our jobs, no matter how well my opponent wants to paint it. We would never do that. And the police know that. That's why they're supporting me.
Thank you. At this point in the debate, we will begin with a direct question from our student panelist. Remember, each candidate has a minute and a half, and there will be a rebuttal of 45 seconds. Our first direct question goes to Mr. Gardner.
According to the New York State Department of Motor Vehicles, the Driver's License Access and Privacy Act, commonly called the Green Light Law, was enacted on June 17, 2019. And took effect on December 16, 2019. It allows all New Yorkers age 16 and older to apply for a standard, not for federal purpose, non-commercial driver's license or learner permit, regardless of their citizenship. Furthermore, applicants who have been never issued a Social Security number are also eligible to apply. As district attorney, would you support the continuation of the state law, giving anyone, regardless of immigration status, the ability to obtain a state driver's license?
No. I believe it is a, let me change my tack there a little bit. I think it's important if you're a immigrant to this country and you come into this country legally and you follow the laws, wait in line, do everything right, then this country should open its arms to you and provide you with the every opportunity that our forefathers, our relatives got. I think that, and if that's what we're talking about in terms of lawful immigrants coming into this country, I think they absolutely have the right to get a driver's license. I think they absolutely have the right to get a Social Security card, and I hope and expect that that the U.S. Government will ultimately accept them as citizens of this country. I think that's an important distinction, though, between whether you enter this country legally and whether you enter this country illegally. If you enter this country illegally, the first act of setting foot on this soil is breaking the law. And that is something that that as a government should never support. I don't believe there's popular support for that position. And I would never support the idea that illegal immigrants can simply walk into the Department of Motor Vehicles and apply for a driver's license.
Thank you. Mr. Kane, your rebuttal, please.
So it's my obligation as the district attorney to enforce the laws that the state legislature and the governor pass. I do not get to choose which laws I like and which laws I don't like and decide not to enforce. If I don't like a gun law, I can't say I'm not going to enforce it. That's the nature of my job. The state legislature passes laws and the governor signs them into laws. And for example, the bail statute in New York, and my opponent is wrong, we did not do bail reform in the district attorney's office before the state legislature did. We enacted a policy because the lawyers in our office were doing it all different ways. And we told them, oh, you should ask for bail on violent criminals, and you should ask for bail on cases in which people are repeat offenders. That's what we did. For my opponent to spin it into some suggestion that we supported the bail law is just wrong.
Thank you. Our next direct question goes to Mr. Kane.
Social media has had a profound influence on the behavior of countless teens across the country. Groups like the Kia Boys, where minors engaged in stealing Kias and Hyundais, were prompted by viral video challenges on sites like TikTok and Instagram. According to the Erie County Sheriff's Office, auto theft surged 150% in July of 2024 as compared to the same month the previous year, with larcenies from vehicles increasing 130%. As district attorney, how would you address this alarming trend within the framework of existing youthful offender statutes, and are there specific legislative changes you would advocate for to ensure accountability while also promoting rehabilitation?
Yes, there are certainly a number of changes to the legislation that I think are appropriate and that we're going to act upon. So the first thing we did in April of this year, right after I took over, was we merged two bureaus in our office. So we now have five senior lawyers in our office that handle not only the raise the age cases, the crimes committed by the youth, but a lot of them are stolen car cases. So we merged those two bureaus, and we've made an impact. You know, the statistics you cite are correct, but there's another statistic from the Buffalo Police Department that stolen car cases have gone down by 39% as of September 30th this year. That's impact. That's progress. And one of the things we did was we took the few number of kids that are stealing these cars. Remember the groups that you're talking about? We took them off the street. We were able to successfully prosecute them and put them in jail. And so that's part of the reason we've made an impact. But one of the things we have to do is we have to work with our state legislature to change some of these laws. There are problems with the new laws. The decriminalization of most crimes for 16 and 70 year olds has created some problems for us. And coupled with the bail statute, when they give desk appearance tickets for a 17 year old kid who stole a car, it's a problem. It has to be addressed. It's not something I can change as a district attorney. The state legislature is constantly being lobbied by our office and by the DA's Association, including the 62 members of the DA's Association across the state. We have to continue to work at this because it's obviously creating problems that were not anticipated. The manufacturers of the two automobiles that are mostly stolen have finally tried to address the problem, and they're changing, making it more difficult to steal those vehicles.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Mr. Gardner.
Look, it's great that TikTok was, you know, that videos were, you know, of people stealing cars, but you can find videos of people committing all kinds of crimes. What this basically gets down to, and the genesis of this raft of car thefts, is policy. The policies of New York State that made it easier for criminals, made life easier for criminals, installed a revolving door on the front of a jailhouse back to the street. The idea that you can commit a crime and simply get an appearance ticket and you're free for another 2 weeks before you have to see a judge is simply insane. And the reality is that my opponent, when he...
Thank you. Okay. Our next direct question to Mr. Gardner.
The 287G agreement is a federal program created in 1996 that involves collaboration between the Department of Homeland Security and state and local law enforcement. This agreement deputizes officers from local agencies to serve as immigration officers and enforce immigration law. The program is voluntary, and the federal government cannot impose it on a local law enforcement agency. Locally, Erie County has never adopted this agreement with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Mr. Gardner, do you believe Erie County should adopt a 287G agreement?
Absolutely. The idea that we can have people in our community who broke the law by arriving here and are taking advantage of our tax dollars, free places to stay, living off of government subsidies, and when they break a crime, or when they break a law, commit a crime, the local law enforcement can't communicate with federal law enforcement officials is simply ridiculous. This is a perfect example of a political agenda trumping common sense. If you break the law by coming into this country, and you break the law while you're here, you should be on an express train out. We should not tolerate that at all. And the idea that we have to sit around and basically say, well, we're not gonna ask about their immigration status, it's insane. And the average voters in Erie County know it. Voters across this country know it. That's why people are absolutely fed up with the idea of illegal immigration. I mean, again, this is a different issue than people who come to this country legally, who wait in line and get permission and want to be worthwhile members of our society. But when you break the law, when your first act of coming to this country is breaking the law, and then the federal and local government erects a barrier to that communication with federal law enforcement, it's insanity.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Mr. Kane.
So I certainly support the collaboration between our departments, the federal government and the state department and the county departments. We do that every day. I work with my federal office, law enforcement partners every day. You know, whether someone's an immigrant or a citizen of this county or the United States, we prosecute people that commit crimes. If an immigrant commits a crime, we prosecute them. We don't care whether they're an immigrant or not. There is consequences if they're an immigrant. They can be deported, and they often are deported. That's not a decision that I make. That's made at the federal government level by the U.S. Immigration Department. And after they're done being serving their time for the crime that they were convicted, they will face those consequences. And if they're deported, that's fine. I support that. We prosecute immigrants that commit crimes against other immigrants. We prosecute all people that commit crimes in this county.
Thank you. Our next direct question to Mr. Kane.
Bail is the payment of a sum of money determined by a judge that secures the release of people accused of crimes while awaiting trial. In 2020, the state instituted a bail reform measure that eliminated bail in most cases involving misdemeanors and lower-level felonies. The results of these changes have been mixed. A study conducted by the Data Collaborative for Justice at John Jay College suggests that eliminating bail in pretrial detention for most misdemeanors and nonviolent felonies reduced recidivism. While it slightly increased rearrest rates for those previously arrested for more serious felonies, do you support the 2020 bail reform measure in New York, or would you like to see changes to the new statutes?
There are definitely changes that are necessary. We've been advocating for that behind the scenes. I'm not going to grandstand and make those announcements in front of, 300 people here, but we do that every day behind the scenes. The bail statute had some serious flaws to it, and the legislature immediately addressed them shortly after enacting the statute. And they addressed some other flaws another year later, and then finally a third year they made some additional revisions. As you may know, bail is the purview of the judge. Our office makes recommendations on bail every day. Every violent crime that's committed in Erie County, we ask for bail or remand. And the judges get to make the decision as to whether they agree with us or not. People that commit repeat offenses, when John Flynn and I changed the policy in the office in 2017, we told our lawyers to ask for bail on repeat offenders. The state legislature made it more difficult to do that in certain situations, and we advocate for change all the time with our partners in state government. The bail statute certainly has some flaws. They need to be addressed. They're combined with, as I mentioned, the Raise the Age legislation. But every violent crime in New York State, with two exceptions, are bail-eligible offenses. And we ask for people to be held on bail or remanded every single day. But ultimately, it's up to the judges. And that's part of the problem that never really gets discussed in the public. And I'm happy to discuss it further. But they are part of the problem. But it's the judge's job, it's their discretion. We get simply to make recommendations. And if people commit crime after crime after crime, of course we're going to ask for bail if we're allowed to under the state law.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Mr. Gardner.
Well, the bail law in 2020 was one of the most disastrous pieces of legislation that has happened in this state, certainly in my lifetime, maybe ever. My opponent and his role in the previous his role in the administration that preceded him, they were thumping their chests about how they instituted a new policy that was never going to ask for bail for misdemeanors. And the reality is that most crime that people experience in our county are misdemeanors. The shoplifting, the theft, those low-level offenses are ultimately what contribute to the idea that crime is on the rise. It leads to the perception that criminals are running the criminal justice system.
Thank you. Our next direct question goes to Mr. Gardner.
In one of your campaign ads that has been in heavy rotation on local television, you make the claim that you will make crime illegal again, put dangerous criminals in jail, and put an end to cashless bail. Laws regarding bail and the release of nonviolent criminals are up to the discretion and the creation of the New York State Legislature. How do you plan to bring an end to cashless bail when that power is not vested within the district attorney position?
The bail law that was passed in 2020 has been revised 3 times in 4 years. And the reason it's been revised 3 times in 4 years is because it's a disastrous policy. It is one of the core functions of the chief law enforcement officer of Erie County, as the district attorney, to advocate for laws that help make our community safer. It is absolutely within the discretion and the purview, and it's a moral obligation for the district attorney of this county to stand up and tell the radicals in Albany that this piece of legislation is ridiculous, it's making our community less safe, and here are the suggestions that I have in order to make it more sane. And it's simple. All they need to do is let judges make the decision. The criminal law, the criminal justice system works best when judges and prosecutors get to make individual assessments based on the facts of each individual case. And my opponent said something that the judges are part of the problem. The problem with this legislation is that it removed the discretion of judges to set bail. Judges can't look at a defendant and say, you know what, I'm going to put bail on you because you've got this criminal, you've got this many failure to appears, this is your criminal history. They've removed that discretion. It's absolutely insane, and the reason they did it was to promote a social justice agenda that does nothing to make our community safer.
Thank you. Mr. Kane, your rebuttal, please.
So my opponent's ad that says that he's going to get rid of cashless bail is completely false. We do not have that authority as district attorneys. It lies in the hands of the state legislature and the governor, and we work all the time with our other partners and district attorney's office across the state to try to get changes to the legislation. Judges do have discretion. My opponent's wrong about this. They have discretion on every violent felony in New York State, with two exceptions. They can set bail, and they often do not. We ask for bail, we ask for remand, and they don't do it. That's a problem not of the legislation, not of our office. It's a problem of the judges not exercising the discretion the way my opponent wants them to or the way I want them to.
Thank you. Our next direct question goes to Mr. Kane.
There have been 57 deaths in Erie County jails since 2005, according to a recent report by Investigative Post. While poor medical care was tied to many of the deaths, some have been ruled homicides or were the result of mental health crises that were mishandled. Erie County has made improvements to its jails under federal direction, but the number of inmate deaths has continued to go up, according to the Buffalo News. Do you think Erie County has done enough to improve the conditions and safety at the holding center and correctional facility? As district attorney, what would you want to see changed at the jails?
So I work every day with the people that work in the jails. In fact, the Erie County Sheriff and I work closely every day. There are problems in the jails that need to be addressed and need to be fixed. The sheriff can't do it on his own. I certainly can't do it. We need the cooperation and the assistance of the Erie County government. And they are in the process of studying the problem. You know, there's conversations about a new jail being built, which is an extremely expensive proposition. But the jail is not suited to fit the number of people and the number of programs that they have in the current jail. It's long overdue that this problem be addressed. They also have a correctional facility out in Alden, New York, where they house people with the Erie County Sheriff's Department. But we are constantly working to try to make the facility better. It's really the sheriff's purview, but I support the initiative. I support looking at the problem more closely. And obviously, if we're going to incarcerate people, which we do every day in this community, you have to keep them safe. You have to give them civilized living conditions. And that's what the sheriff is advocating for, and I certainly support that initiative.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Mr. Gardner.
I think this is an area in which Mr. Kane and I are in full agreement. When you're arrested and you become a ward of basically the government, the county, it's our obligation to ensure that you, at a minimum, survive. I think one of the other things that, so there's always room for improvement, and certainly one death in custody is too many. But I think this also is an intersection. There's an intersection here with the mental health crisis that law enforcement officers, frontline law enforcement officers, see every single day. People who have tremendous mental health problems, and they become the obligation and the obligation of basically jailers. And it puts the people who work in the jail and the correctional facilities in a terrible position, and they can always be more supportive.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Our next direct question goes to Mr. Gardner.
In 2019, New York State implemented significant discovery reform laws known as the 30-30 discovery rules, which require prosecutors to turn over all evidence related to a case within strict timeframes aligned with the state's speedy trial limits. While intended to ensure a more transparent legal process, these reforms had led to substantial challenges for district attorneys, resulting in a sharp increase in case dismissals. Additionally, the reforms have contributed to a decline in guilty pleas and placed heavy burden on assistant district attorneys, leading to high attrition rates among prosecutors. Given these challenges, how do you propose to address the problems caused by the new discovery standards?
Thank you for the question. I think the discovery laws are almost 1B in terms of disastrous pieces of legislation that New York State has passed. It has put an incredibly unfair burden on district attorney's offices here in Erie County and across the state. The idea that turning over information, I mean, when we're talking about vast quantities of information, there's always been discovery in New York State, and prosecutors always had to provide defense attorneys with the information that pertained to their to the defendant's crime, and there is a whole schedule of information that they were always entitled to. What makes this piece of legislation so dangerous is that it links, as you mentioned, the turning over of that information to speedy trial time. Those two things could not be any more different. They do not belong together. It has nothing to do, I think the intention of the legislature was to sort of speed up. You know, they were worried about people being detained in Rikers Island in New York City for years and years. That isn't a problem that really was an issue here in Erie County, and it was a one-size solution to a problem that didn't exist up here. And it has made the lives not only of prosecutors, but also law enforcement, because in addition to that, now they have to, the DA's office has to provide criminal employment records of police officers.
Thank you. Mr. Kane, your rebuttal?
So you are correct. Tying the speedy trial statute with the discovery statute is probably the biggest problem that the legislation dumped on us in 2020. They need to be separated. We should have to disclose all the evidence, of course, and we do that, but making us do it within 30 days is nearly impossible. It makes our jobs extremely difficult. We are advocating on behalf of district attorney's offices across the state every day to make changes to this kind of legislation. Our partners across the state are trying to get the legislature to unlink the speedy trial statute with the discovery statute. I agree that it is a significant problem and it needs to be addressed.
Thank you. Our next direct question goes to Mr. Kane.
In light of the recent dismissal of criminally negligent homicide charges against Ryan Stenzel as a result of a car accident in Lancaster that took the lives of two teenagers, how would you address the challenges faced by the district attorney's office in prosecuting complex vehicular homicide cases? Specifically, how would you balance the need for thorough investigation and evidence gathering with the timely filing of charges, especially when dealing with toxicology reports and expert testimonies that may be subject to change or reinterpretation, particularly in cases where technical or procedural issues can lead to dismissals?
So, understanding that the Ryan Stenzel case is still pending, I have to be very careful. I cannot talk about the facts and circumstances surrounding that case. That decision by the judge is under appeal. We disagree with the decision and we're appealing it. In addition to that, my opponent's judge handled the case for a period of time, so we really shouldn't be talking about it at all. The case, but the issues in the case are not insignificant. The issues in the case need to be addressed by the state legislation. We get toxicology reports every day, but when judges make decisions dismissing cases, we have the right to appeal them. The state statutes really don't apply. They don't make it more difficult to prosecute this case. What happened here was that the judge made a decision that we disagree with, and we're pursuing the appeal. We feel confident in the case, but I'm not going to discuss it any further because it would be inappropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Gardner. Your rebuttal.
That case is disturbing for a number of reasons. Obviously, whenever the lives of two young people are lost in such a horrific manner, it's an absolute sheer tragedy. My understanding is that the real reason that case got dismissed, and again, I can't speak to the absolute every fact at issue, but it was dismissed because there was an error in how the district attorney's office presented that case. That was what the judge decided. Now, Mr. Kane can appeal that decision, but ultimately, that's why that case got dismissed. It wasn't because of the laws. It was because of how that case was presented to an Erie County grand jury. It was a mistake by the prosecutors.
Thank you. At this point in the debate, we're going to air a video initially covered by Channel 2 News. So if you would please run the video.
It was our story that prompted a political attack ad against acting district attorney Mike Kane. But tonight, Kane supporters are speaking out against that ad that they say misrepresents the truth about what really happened 40 years ago. A political ad hitting the airwaves this week is aggressive in its attack on acting Erie County DA Mike Kane.
Mike Kane refuses to follow the law, so why would we hire him to enforce the law?
The ad by Republican James Gardner takes select passages from a Two on Your Side story about Kane's 40-year-old guilty plea to driving while ability impaired, which is a non-criminal violation. Two other charges of assault and resisting arrest were later dropped.
I don't think it's to be expected. I don't think it's part of the game. I think it's over the line. I don't think it's appropriate. This was 40 years ago. I was 21 years old. I made a mistake. It's not relevant to this election or this race.
Also troubling to Kane supporters like attorney Barry Covert is the fact that the records, according to the town of Colony, were released in error as they were subject to a sealing order from 1991.
They know what the sealing order means. They know that they should not be discussing this in any way, shape, or form. It's abhorrent to the legal system and to the legal community that he has issued this commercial. It's terrible.
Gardner did not respond to a phone message left at the chambers of Judge Kenneth Case, where Gardner works as a clerk. He instead released a statement through former Chris Collins aide and political strategist Chris Grant, whose firm created the ad. The statement doubled down on the claims and accused Kane of, quote, whining. That's not how Covert sees it.
He was not convicted of any criminal activity. It was a violation level offense, same as a speeding ticket, same as a disorderly conduct. It's not, it would not a misdemeanor, not a felony. They know this. They know that they're intentionally misrepresenting this for a splash factor.
Now, again, we reached out to Gardner directly for an interview, but received no response. The ad is now running on multiple TV stations in Buffalo and in text messages to voters. Meanwhile, we're hearing Kane is planning an ad of his own to refute some of these claims. Live on your side in Buffalo, Charlie Speck, Channel 2.
After this story aired, there's been a tremendous media attention, both broadcast and print media, regarding the issue. Due to the nature of this, my only question is, how would you respond to what you just watched? And I'm going to give each candidate 2 minutes to respond to the story aired by Channel 2 in regard to why this ad was initially run. And Mr. Kane, also, how do you deal with the accusation? By the way, both men have been running a number of commercials. So I'll let them speak for themselves, and this has been the issue. We begin with Mr. Gardner. You have 2 minutes, please.
Sure. So before my campaign issued that ad, my opponent sat for an interview with Channel 2 News. He had the full opportunity to discuss the incident that happened 40 years ago. He had, and he did. He discussed it at length. And I watched his interview, and what he basically said, he didn't dispute anything in the factual basis of the charges that he faced. There's no question that he was arrested for driving while intoxicated, for fleeing the scene, resisting arrest, and felony assault of a police officer. What he said in that ad was, I should never have been driving. I made a mistake. I got a second chance, and I availed myself of a plea offer. A plea offer, by the way, that when I am district attorney, will not be available. If you assault a police officer in a traffic stop, we're trying that case. After that ad, after he gave that interview and acknowledged those criminal charges, we issued an ad. And I believe that ad is factual. It's factual in the charges that he was charged with. And just because my opponent accepted a plea offer to a non-criminal disposition doesn't mean that he didn't commit those crimes. That happens every day in Erie County. We offer the justice system functions on the idea that not everybody pleads to the highest sustainable charge. Oftentimes, we know, the proof shows that they committed those crimes, and we offer them the option to plead to a lesser charge.
Thank you. Mr. Kane, you have 2 minutes to respond.
So I accepted responsibility for my mistake. It was 40 years ago. I was 21 years old. I was a senior in college in upstate New York, and I pleaded guilty to a non-criminal violation. He's characterized it as a crime. He characterized me as a criminal. That is false. The reporter that did that ad called it misleading. The Channel 2 news reporter, or the Channel 7 reporter, called it false and called it a lie, because that's what it is. They put a current picture of me up there and suggested that I'd just been arrested. The charges involving the assault were dismissed. They were dismissed by a judge. There was no plea deal. It was not part of the situation. I pleaded guilty to a non-criminal violation, and it was 40 years ago. I made a mistake. I owned up to it. And by the way, Charlie Specht from Channel 2, who's in the room today, was provided the report by my opponent's campaign. It's a sealed record. It was sealed by a judge over 35 years ago. My opponent is ignoring a court order sealing a record, and he's using it for a political advantage to try to discredit me. I went on to get my law degree. I went to graduate school. I've been a lawyer for 31 years. He wants to talk about something that happened over 30 years ago, almost 40 years ago. It is a false ad, it's misleading, and it's been rejected by not only the legal community, but everybody that I meet in this community. And one of the things that you should know is that you are going to make mistakes. Your friends and family are going to make mistakes. You are going to have adversity in your life. And you should be able to get up, clean yourself up, and move on with your life. That's what I did. I've accepted responsibility for it. For my opponent to try to use this to his political advantage when he's violating a court order, knowing the records are sealed, and he provided them to a media outlet to try to take advantage of it, is wrong. It's inappropriate, and it's outside the appropriate conduct, not only in a campaign like this, but he is an attorney. He's under an obligation not to behave in conduct that is deceitful.
Thank you. Due to the nature of this video and the seriousness of it, I'm going to allow each candidate a rebuttal now that they've heard each response. So, Mr. Gardner and Mr. Kane, you have an additional minute to respond to the story that was aired.
First of all, my campaign obtained that record legally. Channel 2 News also obtained that record legally through a Freedom of Information Law request. My opponent has a problem with the fact that we found the record. He has a problem with the idea that Channel 2 News obtained the record. His issue is not with me, it's not with Channel 2, it's with the town of Colony that obviously didn't seal the record. I have done nothing wrong. My campaign has done nothing wrong. Channel 2 has done nothing wrong. The only person who's done something wrong in this matter is my opponent. He broke the law. And I understand he wants to say that it was 40 years ago, but what do you call somebody who breaks the law? How can you, as the chief law enforcement officer, deny a defendant accused of the same conduct, the same plea offer that he himself availed himself of? You can't unless you...
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Kane, you have a minute for a response.
So, Channel 2 obtained the report from my opponent's campaign. Colony town attorney then told my opponent's campaign that the record was inadvertently disclosed and it should be destroyed. I've seen the letter. They have it. They're ignoring it. They're continuing to use the ad and violate a court sealing order. If you are going to violate court orders, and my opponent works for a judge, if you are going to violate court orders and continue to do that, that's the kind of judgment that does not belong in the district attorney's office. I have never been convicted of a crime. For him to characterize that as me being a criminal is completely wrong. People that get accused of crimes have their charges dismissed. Those assault charge was dismissed, not by me, not by my lawyer. They were dismissed by a judge and by the prosecutor. That's what happened. I was never convicted of a crime, and for him to characterize it that way is false. It's misleading. And that is, we take a specific oath as lawyers to not engage in conduct that is misleading and deceitful.
I want to thank each of these two gentlemen for calmly responding to the story that aired, and thank you very much for answering the question. Our next direct question now goes to Mr. Gardner.
Deaths reached an all-time high in Erie County in 2023 when 366 people died from opioid-related drug overdoses, according to the Erie County Health Department. What specific strategies would you implement as district attorney to address the opioid and the fentanyl overdose crisis in Erie County, and how would you pursue that prevention, treatment, and law enforcement are integrated into your prosecutorial approach?
Prosecutorial. Got it. I think one of the biggest issues here is the fact that unlike any other substance, a tiny amount of fentanyl is deadly. And this is, again, one of these issues going back to the bail law discussion. Most drug offenses are not bail eligible. Okay, that means that judges don't have discretion to set bail. They don't qualify. And that is, again, something that the 2020 bail law changed. It's something that needs to be undone. And for this exact reason, a misdemeanor weight of fentanyl can probably kill half the people in this room. And we've seen it in our correctional facilities, where trace amounts of this substance get secreted into prisons and jails, and suddenly corrections officers are hospitalized as a result of it. It is a massive problem. It has to be addressed. I think from the criminal justice perspective, it has to be addressed through that bail law legislation. Judges should have the authority and the discretion to evaluate the cases that come before them, to look at the facts before them, and to set bail on people who peddle in this poison.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Mr. Kane.
Sure. So in 2017, John Flynn and I started the very first opioid court in the history of this country in Buffalo, New York. The court was working extremely well. We were able to get people that were addicted to opium, people that were addicted to fentanyl, people that were addicted to heroin, we were able to get them into a treatment court that immediately assessed their needs and got them out of the criminal justice system. Those people needed treatment because if they were let out of jail, they were going to overdose. We started that court 2017. Unfortunately, and I agree with my opponent here, the bail laws were enacted and it affected the ability for that court to proceed. We no longer have the leverage to hold people that are accused of low-level possession of fentanyl or heroin, and we can't get them into treatment court. It's a problem.
Thank you. Our next direct question goes to Mr. Kane.
The last decade has seen a push for changes to address racial disparities in the criminal justice system across the country. Given the role of the Erie County District Attorney in recommending whether a defendant is given probation or jail time, how would you address demands for a more equitable and rehabilitative approach to criminal justice?
So one of the things we did immediately upon coming back to the district attorney's office is we recognized that we did not have a diverse enough group of employees that work for us. We have 110 lawyers and another 100 plus support staff. We immediately addressed that problem. We started hiring people of color and we tripled the number of people of color that work in our office. It's been a tremendous benefit to us. It gives a different perspective to our lawyers and the people that work in our office that are handling these cases every day. You obviously cannot be prosecuting people in different ways based upon their ethnicity. We do not do that in the district attorney's office. I don't think the police departments in this county conduct themselves that way. I have the support of all the police departments in this office, and we are on the same page. We're out in the community every day. It's one of the things I'm most proud of, that we developed under John and my leadership 8 years ago. We developed a community prosecution unit and a community engagement team because we have to be in the community in order to effectively work for them. The people that live in this community have to know us, they have to understand us, and they have to trust us. We work with community-based organizations. We're in the schools every day, you know, conducting panels like gun violence panels and panels involving cow theft. We are in the community. It was never done in the history of this office, and it's been effective. We now have relationships with the community that is most affected by the violent crime in Erie County. And the numbers prove it to be true that it's working. Violent crimes last year has been down by between 35 and 45% from the previous three-year average. What we're doing is working.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Mr. Gardner.
Justice needs to be blind. It needs to be colorblind to color, to creed, to political affiliation. There's no place in the criminal justice system for treating people differently based on the color of their skin, where they grew up, or how much money they make. I would take that exact same approach in how I hire attorneys in the office. When I'm district attorney, the only qualification you need to be an assistant district attorney is you need to be a good lawyer. You need to be good standing. You need to have a clean criminal history. If you're abiding by those three things, I gladly hire you, regardless of the color of your skin. I'm not interested in creating a social justice experiment in the criminal justice system. I think it leads us down a very dangerous road.
Thank you very much. Due to time constraints, I'm going to ask one last moderator question, and then we will begin closing statements. Each have 2 minutes. As everyone knows, this year we will be electing a president of the United States. My question is to each candidate, do you support your party's nominee for president of the United States, and why? Mr. Gardner.
I do. I don't mind saying, and I know that as a district attorney, ethically I'm not allowed to endorse a candidate. I'm not a district attorney yet. I don't mind, and for full disclosure, given everything that the season that we're in, I don't mind saying that that I am going to vote for Donald Trump, who is the standard bearer of the Republican Party, who endorsed me. I think, you know, he obviously is a divisive figure, but people react strongly to him. But I believe that the last 4 years have placed our country on a trajectory that is very worrisome for me. It's worrisome for me as a prosecutor. I think a lot of the charges against President Trump, former President Trump, appear to be sort of a coordinated lawfare campaign against him to discredit him at the ballot box. I believe that the proper format for deciding who's going to be our elected president is through the democratic process. I think we're seeing that play out, and I don't have any hesitation at all in saying that I'll be voting for Donald Trump.
Thank you very much. Mr. Kane?
So, Mr. Lina, as my opponent just alluded to, I'm under a strict ethical obligation not to endorse any specific candidate. So I'm not going to comment on who I'm going to vote for or who I support in the presidential election or any election for that matter. You know, my job as a law enforcement officer in this community is to enforce the laws regardless of party affiliation. I work with people that are Democrats, Republicans, liberals, conservatives. It doesn't matter to me. I do not do my job based upon those principles. I do my job based upon the laws of New York State, and I follow those laws, and I follow the ethical rules that I'm obligated to follow. The district attorneys across this state, by the way, the vast majority of them are Republicans. We work extremely well together. It doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or Republican. We all do the same job, and we're all passionate about law enforcement and public safety, and I'm proud to work with all of my colleagues, not just in the district attorney's office, but in the police departments across this community. As I've indicated before, I have the universal support of the police departments in this community, the Erie County Sheriff's Department, the Buffalo Police Department, and so on. They're Democrats, they're Republicans. We don't care. We do justice, and we protect this community and enforce the laws of this state.
Thank you very much. Due to the coin toss conducted earlier, Mr. Kane will begin with his closing remarks, followed by Mr. Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Lina, and thank you all for being here. You know, it really has been a privilege to not only be here today, but to serve as the Erie County District Attorney for the last 8 months, and even before that, for 7.5 years working with John Flynn. You know, what we do in the office is we work on behalf of the victims of crime. We do that every day, and we are up against some fights. The good criminal defense attorneys in this town, and they are working hard. But we do our jobs every day in the office because we care about the victims. We work with them every day. We sit with them. We talk to them about the crimes. We try to prepare them for the cases and the trials. You know, there is the criminal justice system needs balance. And for the last 10 years, the system has gotten a little out of balance because the reforms that have been put in place in New York State have been primarily focused on the rights of the defendants, the criminal defendants. I think we have to return to looking at the rights of the victims and put the system more in balance. We fight for the victims every day, and we're going to continue to do that. It's been my privilege to serve in this capacity. I come from a big family, a long history of public service in my family, police officers, firefighters, nurses, all across this county, and I'm proud to do the public service that I do in this office every day. I'm proud to work on behalf of each and every one of you. I hope to be able to continue to do so. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Gardner, your closing remarks.
Thank you again for hosting us, and thank you again for your attention, and I have to say, what wonderful, insightful questions from each of you. I mean, it is a true testament to this debate and to your institution. I was as nervous as I could be coming up here today, and you gave me everything that I could handle and maybe a little bit more. But I really appreciate the opportunity to be here, and I appreciate the opportunity to be standing on stage next to my opponent. I mean, the question that every voter has coming up this November 5th is, who can you trust to keep the community safe? And the answer to that question is simple. My opponent has been on the wrong side of every issue affecting criminal justice in Erie County for the past 4 and 8 years. He implemented cashless bail 2 years before he was required to. He implemented the discovery law 4 years before he was required to. And then he stands up here and says, these changes, they've made our life very difficult. He was supporting them before he figured out how deeply unpopular they are and how dangerous it has made our community. And on top of it, he then runs around saying that he's got the support of every law enforcement officer, every law enforcement agency, and then he accepts the support of a political organization that is dedicated to the principle of defunding those police departments. That's hypocrisy on a level that you don't usually see in a race for district attorney. I think it is time to turn the page on his leadership. I think it's time for a fresh approach to how crime gets prosecuted in Erie County. I think it's time to make crime illegal again, and I think I'm the candidate who can best accomplish that. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Gentlemen of St. Joe's, this is a debate. Unlike the national debates, there was no name calling, no talking points. Each man answered each question. And I want to thank them very much for coming here and being civil and continuing this 40-year tradition. Let's give them a nice round of applause.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Chris Fulco. I'm the president here at St. Joseph's Collegiate Institute. And candidates, Mr. Gardner, Mr. Kane, thank you so much for being here with us this morning, for debating respectfully, and for being a model, really, for what a political debate should be. One more round of applause for these gentlemen. As Principal Spillman said at the start of the day, and as Mr. Lina has referenced, this is our 40th debate, and Mr. Lina has been the moderator for all 40 debates here at St. Joe's, going back to 1984. So, Mr. Lina, on behalf of the Board of Trustees, the Christian Brothers, the leadership team, the faculty, the staff, and the students, we thank you for giving this incredible learning experience to generation after generation of St. Joe's students. We really, really appreciate it. And to express their appreciation, I have two alum who a few years ago were sitting in the chairs as St. Joe's students and are now elected officials. So I'd like to welcome to the podium Senator Rob Ort and City Councilman Joel Ferraletto. Let's give them a round of applause.
Well, good morning. It was a little more than a few years ago that we were sitting out there, at least that I was, but I appreciate the few years remark. But I can remember sitting out here as all these students are watching this debate. I can remember walking these halls, and I can remember sitting in Mr. Lina's class and learning about local government, learning about government on all the different levels, and certainly seeing his passion for local government and politics. And it's a passion that has lasted beyond 40 years, but 40 years is a long time. I'm 45. 40 years is most of my life, not to make Mr. Lina feel old, or anyone else here, by the way, feel old, but it's an incredible achievement to see, no doubt, what this debate started as, and I'm sure when it started, Mr. Lina would probably be the first person to say there was no way to know that it would be here 40 years later, going strong and hosting really the marquee elections year in and year out, certainly here in Western New York, whether it's Congress, I was looking at the pictures before, whether it was congressional elections, the district attorney, the mayor of Buffalo, the county executive of Erie County, you name it, the signature election. The signature race going on here in Western New York year in and year out is featured right here, and you heard the great questions, and I want to thank the students, but again, I want to thank not only St. Joe's and multiple administrations, 40 years, the commitment from the school. It's one of another reason that I'm so proud that I went here, but I really do want to recognize Mr. Lina for his personal passion for this debate and for what this debate represents. The idea that it is important to be civically engaged. It's important to understand the issues in these races and how it affects your life and the life of your family and the life of our community at large. And without his commitment, I don't know that this debate would be here today. And so it's an honor for me. When I was sitting in his class, there's no way I would have known that I would have the opportunity to recognize his commitment and his achievement and his passion for St. Joe's, for this debate, and for local government and politics. And so I have a proclamation on behalf of the New York State Senate. I'm not gonna read the whole thing, because you have to get back to class, but I will say, whereas Mr. Theodore Lina, an AP government teacher who has a passion for local government and politics, hosted the first political debate in 1984. Today, the leadership of that debate is shared with a former St. Joe's 1987 alum, Mr. Patrick McHale, who is also an AP US history teacher and who is a former debate participant. And whereas this debate gives students and local community a chance to learn from the candidates' platforms, as you heard here today, on valuable issues affecting residents so they can make educated and informed decisions at the ballot box. And that really is the core purpose of what we're doing here and what all of you are here to do. Now therefore be it resolved that I, State Senator Robert G. Ort, and the entire New York State Senate do hereby recognize and extend our most sincere congratulations to St. Joe's and Mr. Theodore Lina for celebrating its 40th anniversary of its annual political debate highlighting local competitive races here in Western New York. And it has the Senate seal and signed by me October 24th, 2024. So I'm going to present this now to Mr. Ted Lina. And now I want to call up a fellow alum, another St. Joe's graduate, someone who probably was actually here just a few years ago, unlike me. He is a Buffalo City Councilman, a good friend of mine, Joel Ferraletto.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Senator.
Senator Ort and I spoke about a month ago, and we were talking about how this was the 40th year of the debate, and we didn't talk about politics, we didn't talk about government, we talked about the brotherhood at St. Joe's, we talked about the experiences that we had here, and we also talked about how important it is to recognize both the school and Mr. Lina, because 40 years of having this debate is such an accomplishment. So we wanted to make sure that we did this. So he took care of that on the New York State Senate side. I did some work with my colleagues on the Buffalo Common Council, and we have this proclamation for Mr. Lina. I still call him Mr. Lina. One of these days I'll call you Theodore or Ted, but you're still Mr. Lina. In 1983, Mr. Lina began his remarkable journey at St. Joe's, bringing with him a passion for political science and education that has inspired countless students. In 1984, under Mr. Lina's leadership, St. Joe's held its first political debate, which became a cornerstone of civic engagement at the school for 40 years. Mr. Lina's dedication to this annual debate made it an invaluable asset to the community, demonstrating St. Joe's commitment to fostering civic awareness, leadership, and engagement. There's some other items I did want to say here, but I just want to get to the main point of this, that the Buffalo Common Council hereby recognizes and honors the outstanding contributions of Mr. Lina to the students, faculty, and community of St. Joe's, and that October 24th, 2024 is hereby declared Ted Lina Day in the city of Buffalo.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.